Hey. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here with me. Follow, subscribe wherever you're at. Just hit the plus sign, subscribe button, whatever it is. I don't know if you're on Amazon or Apple Music or YouTube, whatever. Hit the thing, whatever the thing is that like subscribes you. You know what I'm saying? And then make sure that you're following MyFi on social media. It's just at MyFi Podcast everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that is at MyFi Podcast. You can follow me as well at Lee T. Baker everywhere. Instagram, Threads, if you're into that, that's, you know, little thing. Wherever, just follow us. And you're going to love the show today. My friend Needles, incredible producer. You're going to love it. Dude's so wise. He's done so much work, hits that you've been jamming to for a while. You'll know his work for sure. So glad you're here. Let's get into it. Here we are. We're ready to go. Great show today with my friend Needles, Kari Needles Kane, incredible producer. He's worked on tons of stuff, you know, like I mentioned, and I'm gonna tell you about some of that in just a minute. We had a great conversation. Talk about his workflow. We talk about managing family and being in an industry that is so reactive. And then if you disappear for a while, you know, you feel a little bit irrelevant sometimes. So we just had a great conversation about his creative process, creativity, some plans he's got for the future, a new studio he's building here in Atlanta, all sorts of stuff. And so I think you're going to love it. Maybe want to take some notes. I mean, good stuff in this episode for sure. So let me tell you about Needles. Kari Kane is his name. Kari Needles Kane. He goes by Needles. He's on the show today. Originally from Michigan, but man, he's really been like all over the place. He ended up getting a master's in music business from NYU. Did his undergrad at Florida State, which we talk a little bit about education in the world of the music industry and creativity, and you know whether it's necessary or not and all that. So that's a good part of the conversation. He ended up getting an internship at Bad Boy with like P. Diddy and the whole Bad Boy crew there in the early 2000s. And that was like a huge time for Bad Boy. So he learned a lot, ended up starting to pursue production. He thought he was going into A&R, ends up pursuing production. Got that the Needles nickname. Actually, he was DJing when he was at Florida State for his undergrad. He was DJing down there, and that's how he got his name. Won multiple Grammys. I don't know if I have the number right. It's like five or six. He's won a lot of Grammys. He's worked with Cardi B, Bruno Mars, Drake, 50 Cent. We talk a lot about that. He's also one of the most chill, just humble dudes that I've ever been around. We worked together a few months back. We both do work for an incredible nonprofit called Dynamo Studios, which you guys should also check out. It's just at Dynamo Studios, where we go get to work with kids in schools, teach them audio production and audio engineering. And Dynamo is an incredible nonprofit that's based out of Chattanooga. And my friend Kessler Kuffman is the reason that I met Needles in the first place through Dynamo Studios. So Dynamo is an incredible thing too that Needles and I are both a part of. And he's just a good dude, chill, talented, humble, and amazing. And so I think you're going to love this conversation that I have with my friend Needles. Needles, what's up, bro?
Not much, man. How are you?
Good. Good to finally catch up with you, man. You're a busy dude.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay busy, man. I got to keep moving and you got to stay active, man. That's the key for me.
Oh, yeah. You like being busy?
At this point, I'm used to it. That's all I know. You know what I mean? If it's not, you know, for music, it's with, you know, the family. I'm always into something, real estate, construction. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's always something going on over
there. Yeah, your wife opened a boutique here in Atlanta?
Yeah, so that's her third boutique.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, so she's been in that field for over a decade. She's always... her first boutique was in Hoboken, New Jersey. Then we moved to Atlanta. We had a few shops, and this one is her latest. But yeah, in that construction kind of feel, we build our house. We're building the duplex right now, building the studio. It's all this. I'm like a contractor. That's like my other kind of thing, man. So yeah, it's a big part of, you know, my wife's a realtor. I'm a contractor.
Nice.
And that's just other stuff we do to kind of keep the money coming in, you know.
I'm excited about the studio thing, dude. I was talking to a couple of our mutual friends just about it, and well, tell me all about that. I want to know all about it. I'm gonna get to all your history, all that sort of stuff, but yeah. I want to know about the studio.
So yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about it. It's been a little bit of it's been something I've been working on for 3 years. Actual building of the studio, I mean, which is ridiculous. It's kind of started around COVID. I had the residual effects from COVID as far as like supply chain stuff.
And oh, okay.
It's been all kinds of like issues getting this place open. I'm at the tail end. But it's basically, it's a $1 million studio in the middle of, Atlanta, right across from Pont City Market.
Oh, it's, nice. Midtown. Yeah.
Yep. It's in Midtown. It's designed by, WSDG, which they're like maybe top 2, top 3, kind of studio builders worldwide. They've done all kinds of, you know, really, really, They did Alicia Keys studio. Was that Jungle City? They've done all kinds of things around. So, it's been great kind of, you know, working with them and just to make sure I got like top of the line, everything, you know, from, you know, just the way the walls are constructed, the size of the rooms, for me cutting concrete to make sure the rooms don't touch and each room has its own AC. And it's been a lot of like really tedious work, but I think it'll be worth it at the end of the day. I hope to open, you know, towards the beginning of next year, and the main kind of purpose for it is just a hub for artist development.
Oh, nice.
Primarily with, you know, new artists. That seems to be my thing, my little area that I really want to concentrate in now is just working with new artists, developing their sound. All while getting really good content. And so that it's just going to be the hub for, you know, all of that. There's going to be, you know, an app to go along with it, so you can tune in and subscribe.
Nice.
And see what we got going on in each room.
There's watching people live, yeah. Like create. Oh, that's
yeah,
crazy.
You're going to be able to watch what I got going on every day or whenever I'm working. You can tune in, kind of like Twitch and like Kai Smet, you know, it's going to be like that. You're going to be able to chat with me. You're going to be able to submit for stuff. It's going to be a really interactive kind of thing, like a community that I'm trying to build. So it's, once again, it's a lot of work. I'm still, you know, putting some things together, but I'm excited for it though.
That's awesome. Well, you definitely got the background for it, man. Like I know, you worked on was the Doo Wops and Hooligans record for Bruno Mars. Like, I know you did stuff with Drake and Cardi B and all of that stuff. But you know what and that's super impressive. The Grammys, the sales. I mean, dude, I don't think enough people realize like the things that you've had your hands on and what you've done. And so like, man, I'm a fan.
Appreciate it.
I'm honored you're on the show today.
Thanks.
You know what I was shocked by? I think, and this isn't a knock against not going to school, but like you have a undergraduate degree, a graduate degree, you did some incredible like you went the formal education route. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think that in the music industry, I don't know that that's like super common.
Yeah, it's definitely not the norm. I don't know that it's necessary, but it benefited me for sure. Like,
well, I was going to ask if you felt like it was beneficial.
It was kind of something where like one thing led to the next, you know. I started my undergrad at Florida A&M University.
Okay.
Where I was there for business administration. I was a DJ in high school, kind of brought that up along to me with an undergrad. Didn't really kind of click with the school, but I just got more and more into music. I DJed all the time. So I was like, look, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I know I want to do something involved with music. Let me find a way to learn more about music, you know. And for me, that was going to like a grad program or going somewhere that could teach me all the ins and outs about the industry. But then also, for me, New York was the place to be because New York was, as far as hip hop was concerned, was like the Mecca.
Oh, yeah.
Still, brick and mortar labels, all that stuff. So, I had to get out of school early. Obviously, I wanted to graduate. So I switched schools, went to Florida State for like a year and a half, finished Florida State, got my degree in marketing, and applied and got accepted to New York University's music business program, which at the time was very rare. There wasn't a lot. It wasn't like how it is today, where there's like a ton of music business programs. It was rare. And for me, once again, it was like a win-win because it was in New York.
Yeah.
So went there right before I left to go to New York. I sold my turntables and bought an MPC just to be like portable and just have something to do as a hobby. It was never like a goal or a plan to be a producer. I was really going to be like an A&R, at least that's what I thought. But a part of the curriculum at NYU is to have an internship. They had this like really dope listserv that had the different opportunities. I saw Bad Boy and I went up there and, you know, just kind of did my thing. And I didn't, you know, I really didn't let them know I made music at the time. They just, after a few months of working there, and they kind of asked what I did on the side. And I was like, look, I just started making beats. Here's a few beats. And I worked for the part of the company that managed the Hitmen. So, so Bink and Stevie J and Mario Winans and all those guys that made all those big hit records for Bad Boy. So I worked for that part of the company. The guy I worked for, Damon Eden, liked the music that I played for him, and he started shopping my music along with the other Hitmen. And that's really how I got my start. One of the CDs made it to Def Jam, and I got a little quick placement, and then the rest is kind of history.
What was that first place? What was the first thing you were like, oh, man, this is serious?
It was on this Rough Riders 3 soundtrack, and it was the nice. Song called, like, I Don't Give a Fuck, something like that. Yeah. I think that was the name of the song. Yeah, I did two songs, but I, you know, the A&R just told me to just keep coming up there and playing her stuff, and eventually she started managing me. She was the A&R for Method Man, Redman, and DMX. And so, yeah, she started managing me, and she's the one that kind of got me all my first placements and my start in New York, you know.
That's crazy, dude. I just don't. And you're an MPC guy still, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's just the way I kind of think about creating. It's fun. It's tangible. It doesn't feel like I'm, you know, programming a computer. It's just, I don't know. It's something about it that with the workflow. Really, the main thing for me on the MPC is, I like to start ideas, and if I get stuck, I like to move really quick. So on the MPC, it's set up in like sequences, right? So you do a sequence, I can add drums and all this stuff. But if I get stuck, I don't have to like close, save, open a new thing. You know what I'm saying? I just hit one knob, I have a blank slate. And so when I normally make music, I'll make 5, 6, 7 ideas really quick. Then go back to them, see which ones I like to flush out, and then maybe put it in the Pro Tools or something like that just to add more stuff. But yeah it's definitely how I kind of create. I mean, I've tried Logic. I did some, you know, a couple years on Logic, but I just kept coming back to, you know, the MPC. As it got better and better, it started to update itself. It's a hardware, software type thing. So
are you on a new one? Are you on a new one? Or are you on like?
Yeah,
one of
right now I'm on the like keyboard one. Okay. Yeah, it's the MPC Key 61 or something like that. It's kind of like an all-in-one type thing. So yeah, man, it's just still the basic.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as it was. I love the fact that they kept a lot of that the same, and then also how they, you know, they had time stretch and all the stuff they didn't have back in the day. So it makes
sense. I was watching something with Mark Ronson the other day, and he's an MPC guy too, and he's got like his OG MPC that like DJ Premier signed for him and all this stuff from like back in the day. And there's something if you're listening, an MPC is just like, and you don't know what that is, it's like got 16 pads on it, and you can kind of finger drum and like create beats and sample and put sounds on it and all sorts of things. It's just how some people start. A lot of producers do it, but I know that like it seems like the producers that have a workflow, and I want to ask you about that too, because the producers that have a workflow, they have a thing where they go, "Nah, this is how I work." Like when Timbaland's like, he's a beatbox guy, like so much of his beats, like start that. I mentioned Mark Ronson, you know, he's a MPC guy. You're an MPC guy. I know people who just pick up a guitar and they chop up a loop and, you know, create something like that. But you have a thing and the workflow seems to be so important. I think that would be important for any creative person, no matter if you're a graphic designer, if you're a contractor, like whatever, like having that flow. Has your flow been, I know it's been important to you, has it changed throughout the course of your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one thing is, you know, it's like always trying to find inspiration. That's like the biggest thing, like trying to find something that's going to inspire you to like even finish the beat or like see that something has potential. So when I started, drums were my thing. Like I used to really dig, and you know, it wasn't like it is today where, you know, if you type in drum, like you can just get a million drums at your disposal. It's like you literally had to almost like
go cut it out of a record
and rob and trade and do all kinds of stuff to get drums. So I somehow collected, and that was like my thing, really really big kicks and snares, and so that's how I would kind of start my drums, at least having those collection of drums just handy right away. And I'm pretty much a sample based kind of guy, you know, at least that's how I started. I, you know, have tons of records. I'll just, you know, at least when I started, when I was, you know, and broke, I would, there was a guy on the corner, he sold like $1 records or 50 cent, you know, records. And I would go and just grab all the crappy records that I can afford and just sit at home and just listen to them and find little stuff here and there. And, you know, didn't have a lot of sampling time, but just made the best of it. And, you know, I think that, that along with my drums was really kind of how I kind of got my start and kind of made a name for myself. And that hasn't changed a lot. I think the process of digging for samples is a little different, you know.
Packs and whatnot now.
Yeah, it's like, you know, YouTube, it's all kinds of stuff. It's where anywhere you can kind of get the inspiration. I mean, sometimes it's Splice, sometimes it's whatever. I'm not really like opposed to Splice or wherever I can get anything that I think is dope. Also, another thing about my workflow is that has changed is I don't, this is going to sound weird, but I don't really pay as much attention to the actual creation of the beat per se. I'm more so about the song. Like, what is this song going to be? Like, I can make a beat in like 10, 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Whatever. It'd be a scratch idea. But in this point in my career, it's like, I just realized like a beat's a beat, but a great song is a well-written song will go a lot further than a really, really dope beat. You know what I mean? So I'm working with the writers. I'm really hands-on with who I work with. I'm really, in the traditional sense, that kind of a producer where I'll like guide the song to where I want it to go and things of that nature. And so unlike back in the day where I had hours and hours and hours alone with no kids and stuff like that to like tweak a snare and EQ this. And I don't, you know, I just know how to get it there faster. And really concentrate on the, you know, kind of creation of the song.
Yeah. And you came up like in the era, like when you were at Bad Boy, that was like the era where people were paying, and I guess it's the same in creative, every creative industry in a sense, but like people were paying big money for beats like early 2000s. And now it's just, it's not that way. Like the advance on a beat.
This thing is crapping out on me. Hold on a second.
You good. It's almost more like you should be working on whole songs instead of trying to place beats and work with artists more often, which seems like what you're doing. I mean, I know you've always worked with artists, you know, from the ground up, but it seems like that's even more so, even with the studio and artist development and all that now. So it's even more about that than it has been. So that would make sense as to why you're going, no, man, I'm trying to work on whole songs, not just like 60 more ideas.
Yeah, I got a taste of executive producing a project and, you know, I did this is an artist named Nicole Buss, and I discovered in Amsterdam, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and got her signed to Roc Nation, was able to executive produce and pretty much do her whole project. And I probably got the most enjoyment kind of working on that, and just from that creative process to really be able to string together a group of beats and songs that all kind of felt cohesive and would leave the listener with, you know, a vibe and like an idea of who that artist is. I definitely get more enjoyment out of that process. And but the thing about it is it's just as hard as getting a it's harder than getting a placement is to really break an artist in-house, like get them a deal and just all of that, especially nowadays with social media and all the kind of hoops and hurdles you have to go through. So I think my sweet spot is finding signed artists that aren't really doing much on the label or are kind of starting out, or the label doesn't quite know what to do with them. And
yeah,
that's kind of been my sweet spot. And then I'm still trying to figure out, I feel like just like the rest of the industry, really trying to figure out that conduit to really get good talent to the masses, and while having some type of integrity and, you know, and just kind of keeping the music first. So, it's a little bit of a mix. Which has kind of been biting me in my ass a little bit lately, but I haven't been like submitting records like I used to, like all the time. I really have been working with just a ton of new artists that I think are really dope and kind of getting their career started with hopes that one of them.
Yeah. Somebody breaks.
Yeah. Cause you know, if that happens, then what, I have 10 songs on Drake's new album, you know what I'm saying? Like on with the new Drake's album, you know what I'm saying? Or the new Beyonce. I'm really big on trying to find those next
Beyonce. That kind of thing. I feel you on that. I think that's just you over time. It sounds like you've just narrowed it down to what you really feel like you're good at and what you enjoy doing and that sort of thing. And I think that's important because you can get lost in trying to do 10. The music industry, there's so many ways. Yeah. So many avenues for you to, even just as a guitar player, bro, there's like 100,000 things I could try to focus on. TV, film, music, which I do a little bit of, and, you know, making loops for producers, which I do, like whatever. You could focus on 1,000 different things, but finding those things that you feel like you do something unique with and that you enjoy, man, it just takes time too.
It does. It takes a lot of time. I mean, I've had a couple big records that allow me to have that like that runway to be able to like not submit to start working with so it's like that has helped. But once again though, I mean, I still have to stay relevant. That stuff really helps whatever I'm doing move faster. So, you know, I kind of it really now kind of getting back into the submitting for different projects and that kind of rat race. But I've been doing this for over 20 years now and it's been interesting, all the kind of twists and turns and ups and downs to kind of get to where I am now. So
I know, like you say about staying relevant and making sure that you're like back in the game. I know I was listening to an interview the other day on another podcast with Ryan Tedder, and he said he took like a year off of music, and he's like, now that's like, it's so hard to take that much time. Obviously, like, people forget about you. But what I've noticed with you though, and I told you this in a text one day, I admire how engaged you are with your family and how much you post. Like, I've seen you post stuff like just out playing basketball with your kids, or like at doctor's appointments with your kids, like whatever. What is that balance like, man? Because you're like a wanted dude in the industry, in a really busy industry where if you do take a second off, you could get forgotten. But at the same time, you're like there opening your wife's boutique and taking your kids to the doctor's appointments, all those sorts of things. What is that? How do you find that balance?
It's tough. It's probably been pretty much been the story of my career. You know, because my first child, you know, it's funny. I kind of named my child. If I had a newborn or something coming, I would get a single. So like my first My Daughter was a song that I did for this artist, Young Buck. It was Let Me In. And then my middle child was I'm Going In by Drake. Oh, like, wow. Literally, like, if I would have a kid, I would have a single come out. And then my my son was Just the Way You Are by Bruno Mars. Oh, 2002. Man. Yeah. So it's always been the push and pull. I think the big thing for me is just over the time is just learning how to work smarter.
Yeah.
Like learning how to have a team, trying to kind of delegate some things. I grew up in a household with two parents, and they were very loving and caring, and they were present, and, you know, took me to football. And I don't see myself any other way. I couldn't see myself being a different type of father than that, or not there and stuff like that. So for me, I just have to make time to do kind of a little bit of everything. I do think, I don't want to say my music career has suffered. I'm just not on the scene and as present as I could be or should be. But I think it's, in some ways it's kind of worked for me in the sense that I've never been super hot that I'm going to fall off the map, but I've never been too cold where people completely forget about me. I get calls every day. I just kind of stay like right on the radar, get a little record, you know, and I've had like a really interesting career in that sense. So, but that balance is, I mean, not only am I balancing just family and industry, I have an autistic child. So that's one thing. My wife is an entrepreneur. So that's a whole, you know, other thing. And, but, I think that I've tried my best, you know what I'm saying, to be present in both places. And, you know, sometimes you have to be selfish with your time sometimes and say, hey guys, I gotta work. I gotta go. I need to spend some time and make some money, cause I'm not making any money hanging out with you guys. You know what I mean?
That's real.
So, Yeah, for sure.
How do you know what to say no to? Do you have like a thing in your mind, any like criteria or anything where you just go like, I just have a bar, or I have some framework that allows you to make a decision to go, that's just not worth it?
That's a great question. Just because I really believe that there are no like, it's weird. I don't believe there are any like wrong moves. I just feel like you make a move and then just roll with it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like God has already got my life mapped out. I just make decisions and roll with it. So like when I decide on like what I'm going to do with my time during the day, I do say yes a lot. I say, because I never know what that may lead to. Sure, and a lot of times in my career, it's always kind of been one random thing that's led to another cool thing that's led to this, that's led to that. So I would say I don't say no enough, but yeah, I mean, I tend to like want to work on things that I think are positive and kind of uplifting. Nowadays, I don't work on a ton of rap stuff just because, one, I don't really like in my opinion, in order to like place rap stuff, or you kind of have to be really on the scene. You have to be in the studio with the artist at 4. And, you know, you have to be right there to get those placements and, you know, and in that environment and stuff like that. So I kind of tend to stay away from that. I feel like I've steered more towards pop and R&B. Kind of vibes. I think R&B pop is kind of my sweet spot, because I can work out of my house. At least right now until my studio is done. And, you know, I can work whenever I get the opportunity to work. I can work with a songwriter, do a song and submit the song. And so, that's a great question. I kind of try to prioritize things by, you almost have to, by like what's going to bring in some money, you know?
Yeah.
But I also just really like being dope. Like, I feel like you know, I kind of came up in an era where it wasn't just like, yo, I'm trying to make money, 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 money. It's just like, I want to be, I want to be known as somebody that's bringing something to the culture and doing something different, or, you know, and being dope is what's going to like bring the money and all that stuff.
Man, I did want to ask you about just the way you are, because it's personal to me. And when I found out you did that song, I was like, oh man, it's amazing. When my daughter turned 1 year old, I had taken a bunch of pictures from her first year, you know, of life, and we made a little video for her birthday, and that was the song. And,
that's crazy.
And my wife and I always joked about it, because it's not super appropriate for like a daughter's birthday. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's about like, it's like a love song. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, somebody's, there's a couple of lyrics, like when we watch that video back, that my wife and I always laugh at, you know, because it doesn't fit the context.
You know,
but I remember, so that song's obviously like always meant a lot to our family. We'll repost that video, like, you know, every time that, you know, her birthday comes around, you know, it comes up on like, you know, memories and Facebook or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So I hope you get paid for that, bro. I hope you get paid every time I repost that video, you know?
that half a penny.
What was that? What was that like though? Cause that was, I mean, I guess Bruno wasn't Bruno yet. But how, I guess, and was that like your first like huge project, I guess, that blew, your first big single? What was the process like getting to be a part of that? And then the subsequent, you know, things that happened, you know, that came to fruition because of that.
Yeah. So, the way that kind of record came about was, it wasn't intended for Bruno at all. It was,
oh, really?
Yeah. That song was intended for this rapper, Lupe Fiasco.
Oh, I love Lupe Fiasco.
Yeah. And Lupe, we worked a lot in the past, and I was on his first album and stuff like that. I'm a big fan. And, he started doing some songs that kind of like crossed him over a little bit. I think it was Superstar and some other ones or whatever. So
he did
I
kind of wanted to. He did one song with Bass Nectar that was so, man, if you did that sample, bro.
I think I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? I can't remember the name of the song. That was,
but he started kind of branching out from like straight hip hop stuff, and Atlantic, that label was big on, because they had like B.O.B. too, who kind of started crossing over, you know. So I, you know, did the beat with a friend of mine. His name is Cassius, and I always had Adam Levine in mind. I, you know, my guy wrote the hook. We had somebody reference it, and at the time I had been listening to a lot of Coldplay and just a lot of Coldplay, and so that's why that kind of hook has those kind of big kind of elements, so we did the song. I wanted to have it, you know, Lupe featuring Adam Levine. I sent it to Atlantic, to Aaron Bayshuk. He liked the song, loved the song. And they were like, we probably can't get Adam Levine. We're going to try this new kid. His name is Bruno Mars. I was like, Bruno? No, he was saying, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like, he wasn't big like that. So, but they were pretty adamant. And so he sent the song back. Bruno just did the hook. Sound great, you know. And with Atlantic, a lot of the records they work on, it's like constant tweaking and stuff like that. You'll like tweak a record for forever. So I spent like a month and a half kind of working on drums, kind of switching things up. The hook part of the song always kind of stayed the same, pretty much. Like, but like a year, not a year, but like a month after we submitted the song, everything kind of just went cold. I was like, I don't know what's happening with this record after they had me work on it for a month and a half. But I got a call from Aaron. He's like, hey, man, I'm about to change your life. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I was like, whatever. He's like, Bruno Mars did this. It's going to be the first single. And I'm just like,
man,
I don't know. I like I said, once again, he wasn't like.
Yeah, you don't know what that means back then.
So I thought it was cool. Sent them the session. They added some stuff. Like, they kind of, like, the way I did the piano originally was very, like, basic, because I'm not a keyboard player or whatever. So it was, like, very, like, basic. So they kind of like played it out, the Schmeezingtons or whatever, which is dope. Like, I really like, like just that element alone, like that's pretty much, and then like the drum pattern was the same, but they kind of like changed the actual sounds and shit like that, but whatever. I like the way it came out. Like it felt, you know, when they, when I and I have to find that version that I have that says, you know, they'll, the, it's the watermarked by Atlantic and says, this is owned by Atlantic Records every like 5 seconds or whatever. So, so yeah, man, I mean, basically the song came out and, you know, and once again, my wife was pregnant and, you know, I've had a song or two on the radio at the time, but, my son was premature. He came like a month early or whatever. So I had to like go to the hospital like day after day for like a month, just back and forth from my, the, you know, my apartment to the hospital. And I just kept noticing like they, every time I would get in the car, the song would be on, you know what I'm saying? And I just like, this is kind of crazy. Like this song is playing a lot, you know what I mean? And, but never did I think it would go on and be like number one song in the world and like, I don't know, 15, 16 times platinum. And it's just,
that's crazy.
It's, yeah, it's been a massive record, a massive blessing, and really opened my eyes to, you know, prior to that, I've been doing like a lot of hard shit. Like I did stuff for like 50 Cent and really hard, dark music, minor chords and stuff like that. But this was one of the first records I collaborated with. You know, before I did everything myself, so I collaborated. I did major chords kind of things, and it kind of ended up in that pop space. So all those things were new to me, and it just kind of opened my eyes to all three, you know. So since then, I've collaborated more. I've, you know, done more, or at least attempted to do more pop stuff. Although it's weird, I haven't had a ton more after that. I'm still kind of in that R&B space. But no, it's once again, it's been a blessing, and you know, to this day, I followed a guy on Instagram that referenced the song, you know, so I have like a reference with another guy singing it, and
that's crazy,
you know. Yeah, it was cool to go from just an idea in a small little studio in Atlanta. It was I think it's Vision Studio in a small little room, and just to end up being this big thing, definitely a blessing.
It's crazy, dude. What's your what's like the song that you have worked on that maybe you're the most proud of? I mean, I know that was a huge one, and there's probably a ton of them, but you look back and go, nah, I was stoked about that from bottom to top.
That's tough. There's a couple that come to mind. One was the song I did with Drake and Lil Wayne and Young Jeezy. It's called I'm Going In. Because to me, like, I was living in New York and the music kind of dried up in New York. Like, the New York sound kind of dried up, and, like, you know, Atlanta was taking over and T.I. and G, you know what I'm saying? So I basically packed my family up and like, hey, we got to go to where the music is.
Oh, that's why you moved.
That's why I moved, because everything was slowing up. You know, now I just didn't want to wait for it to be completely dead.
Yeah.
So I was like, look, guys, we got to move. And I was like, look, it'll be cheaper down here. We can, you know, whatever. So we moved. My wife was reluctant, but we moved down and we struggled like for the first year and a half. It was a big, big struggle. But then once we kind of got our bearings and kind of got settled, one of the first beats I did, in my opinion, that had some kind of Southern taste to it.
Oh, yeah.
Was that song I'm Going In. So that's me like adding 808s and having little breakdowns and stuff like that. Like, so that actual song was like my version of A Millie by Lil Wayne. So you'll kind of, you may hear some similarities in that. But at least the way the song was kind of formatted. But you know, but that song I'm always proud of. You know, that went from just being a friend of mine told me, Lil Wayne's at the studio, go take him the CD of your beats and stuff. So I went down there and, you know, back then, this was when there were still CDs. I went there and I just realized that my Sharpie ran out. So I basically gave Lil Wayne, it wasn't even Lil Wayne, it was like Lil Wayne's guy, a CD with no words on it. You know what I mean? And then he went and just leaked all the records on the internet. back at the time, that was like, that wasn't like idea. Because back then, leaking a record was just like, you'll never see any money off of it.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Falls into the biz. But one of the records caught, which was that record, I'm Going In. And that ended up going platinum and being one of Drake's kind of earlier big songs. And then...
They won a Grammy for that?
He didn't win a Grammy, no. It was like... So Far Gone, I guess that's his first mixtape.
Okay.
They put it out in retail. Like, it was a mixtape that just really broke him as an artist. And then they, like, did a retail version, and that song was on there.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, so that was cool. This other record I did, once again, the artist from Amsterdam that I literally discovered in, like, a talent show in Amsterdam. Said that, you know, I want to work with you. Had her come to the States, and we worked off and on for a couple years, and someone saw her on Instagram, saw me working with her, and told me that Roc Nation's in town, come bring her to this big meeting. And to see that, like, she pretty much got signed on the spot to a couple months later, you know, once again, it's my first time executive producing a project, getting the whole project. Pretty much, I did about 10 or out of 13 songs, something like that.
Dang.
But to seeing that song go number one, that's another song that went number one, AC or whatever. But like, that was really cool to see that. I think that, you know, for me, I have a goal to like having number ones in different charts, different genres. So, I think I got 4 or 5. So I got, I'm trying to get a country number one. I'm trying to get a gospel number one. And those are like some of the goals I have, a dance number one and stuff like that. So that was cool to get my urban AC kind of one out the way.
Nice, man. That's a good, question too. Like, so you have goals, your workflows match those things. Like, do you have a normal flow? I mean, I know that, you know, it's always different because it's the music industry and you're just kind of, you know, it's always sort of reactive.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday, Needles wakes up, grabs a cup of coffee and goes to the studio, and you like, I got these 3 hours, I'm blocking out. So you have a normal flow like that?
Yes, in the sense that, you know, I definitely have, like, my day, at least right now, is very like... I have time blocks. Like, I try to work out in the morning. I know I have from 10 to 2 maybe to figure out what I kind of want to do. A lot of times, like, my brain's not warmed up early. You know what I'm saying? Like, I gotta, so I just kind of get in here and check emails and kind of fiddle around. And then eventually I kind of get the stuff, but then I leave. I may pick up a kid or something like that. But I think my days are kind of set up, or it's more about sessions. Okay. You know, I rarely these days just make beats just to make beats. I want to get back to that.
You know, I really want people now.
Yeah. I mean, but they're not like huge people. They're just like up and comers and are newly signed artists and new songwriters and stuff like that. And I tend to like make stuff on the spot, say, hey, you like this, you like that, you like that. You know, that's kind of what I work for, whatever. I make the beat for whatever I'm working on that day. You know, I do try to prepare maybe like an hour before, gather some samples, gather some drums, you know, and kind of put some stuff together. But I think it's that process of, and you know, and I also work with Dom. I don't know if Dom's been my engineer for, over 5 years at this point.
Oh, nice.
But you know, I gather my stuff. I'll do, you know, sequences. I won't even format the whole song. I'll do a whole bunch of sequences, say, hey, I started these ideas. Do you like any of these? And they're like, yeah, I like that one. Yeah. And then I'll build it out a little bit more. And then I give it to Dom. He'll put it in Pro Tools, sequence it. And, you know, the thing about I like about my engineer slash the guy I produce with, he plays, he's like a jack of all trades, you know what I'm saying? So he's like a Swiss Army knife. So having somebody like him, it really kind of helps me, especially if I have to leave. He knows how I like stuff to be done.
Yeah, he keep it going.
Yeah, he knows I like symmetry. I don't really like, you know, I'm big on like the writers writing a song that other people can relate to.
Yeah, yeah.
Songs that have a melody that you can get relatively quick. A lot of writers tend to like just do melodies that people can't catch relatively fast. And the key is by the second verse, the people should know the know it. You know what I mean? Those are the good songs that, you know, the melody comes on, they say, oh, this is kind of catchy. Oh, you know what? This hook is cool. I like what it said. Oh, you know what? The verses come around again. I think I kind of know the melody already. Yeah, yeah. And they're able to sing it like the first or second time they hear the song. Those are the songs that I like. And I also tend to push my writers towards like love songs, because I feel like that's a universal language. Everybody kind of either wants to be in love or broke up. Is it, you know, that type of thing. But I rarely like songs about like my watch or something very small thinking, you know, or something that like
harder to relate to.
Yeah. And stuff that's like catered towards just rich people. I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
I hate the songs that are just like my Lamborghini. I'm just like, yo, most people don't have a Lamborghini. Yeah. You know, they may want to get it, but still like, right. You can write another song or take it from another perspective.
Yeah. Just try to relate.
And then, you know, if I'm working with a rapper, like a trap rapper or something like that, like I kind of push them to try to just get out of the box of, I don't even care if you talk about drugs and whatever you talk about, but just do it a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like find something unique or something, a different approach to how you're saying whatever you want to say, you know? So I always push people. I push writers in a session. Some of them get mad with me because I'm very, very picky, very, very like, yo, make it make sense, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I like, I really like pop music, because I feel like the writers, they really take the time to make everything make sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a lot of like, oh, this is just a vibe. You know what I'm saying? I hate that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, stay on the theme.
Yeah, stay on the theme. You know, you don't have to bounce around and keep the same tense. You were just talking about we. Now you're talking about, just keep the same tense throughout the thing. You know? Yeah, so.
Yeah, I appreciate all that. I want to ask you before we shut it down. Mm-hmm. Ask everybody this. Everybody gets a little mad, but they like it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Your three desert island records, like your three favorite records of all time. And it, you know, maybe they're the three that influence you the most. Maybe they're the three that, like, you know, you're just into right now. Like, whatever it is. But your three, like, big records of all time.
So, for me, it would be Thriller.
Nice.
Nas, Illmatic.
Nice.
And my third one would... That's tough, man. It'd be like maybe a Tame Impala record.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I really like Tame Impala just because it's a vibe.
Yeah, the Currents record's great.
Yeah, Currents or, what is it? The Rush.
It's the one after Currents.
I really like that. Just for, I mean, if I'm on an island, man, like, I don't want to just have, like, I want to have... Because chord progressions and sound selection is everything. You know what I mean? Like, so like a lot of urban music is like the other stuff, like the drums or something. But I really love chord progressions and it's just how they make you feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you keep floating. So
that's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it too. I have all three of those albums on vinyl, so I feel good about myself.
Dope. Yeah.
Bro, I appreciate the time, man. I appreciate you hanging out, being on the show, man. I know people just love this so much, and I know you're a busy dude. So thanks for the time, bro. It was great to hang.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, I always like to talk about my journey. What's crazy is everybody's journey is different, and you know, just keep the faith, and it definitely can happen, man, no matter what.
That's good. I appreciate you, Noodles.
Okay. All right. Peace, bro.
Man, what a great combo. The dude's done a lot of stuff. We didn't even talk about the latest Grammy that he won for the track that he was a part of on the last Cardi B album. And I mean, all sorts of stuff. We didn't get into the 50 Cent stuff a ton. I mean, go follow him on Instagram. His Instagram is at Production by Needles, but it's P-R-O-D by Needles, N-E-E-D-L-Z. It's in the show notes, at Prod by Needles on Instagram and everything. That's the best place to follow him. When the studio gets up, the studio that he's building, there's going to be a lot associated, like he mentioned, the app, a lot of social media stuff associated, website, all sorts of things associated with that studio. So there'll be a lot of stuff to follow once that's up. He mentioned in the episode, hopefully the first of 2024, that's going to finally get going. So, but you can follow him at Prod by Needles, Production by Needles, P-R-O-D-B-Y-N-E-E-D-L-Z. It's in the show notes, as well as some more of his credits and things that I posted in there as well, if you want to check that out. But I just want to say thanks to Needles for being on the show. He's a busy guy. I appreciate the time and all the years of wisdom in the music industry and creative industry as a whole. Make sure to follow MyFi at MyFi Podcast everywhere on social media. You can also go to MyFi.com to check out past episodes of the show. We had Lauren Spring on this new season, Ariel Posen, who's an incredible guitar player, my friend Joel Cordy, who's an entrepreneur, owns a company called Chase Bliss. It's a guitar effects pedal company. And this great episode with Needles, we got great episodes, y'all. I'm so stoked about the next couple episodes. So make sure you're subscribed, make sure you follow us on social. And until next time, you guys have a great one.